My name is Lauren, and I am an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it might better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and/or understanding. Kelly will read the preamble.
Hi, my name is Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is the fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Austin will read the steps.
Hi, my name is Austin. I'm an alcoholic. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Robin will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Robin. I'm an alcoholic. Traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Luis.
Hi, my name is Luis, and I'm an alcoholic. It's great to be here. I want to thank Duncan for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight. And I want to welcome the newcomer. If you're new, if you're counting days, you're in the right place. I remember roughly over 3 years ago when I stepped for the first time into this room, how I found it overwhelming. And I really didn't want to be here. I had been to an AA meeting in Mexico, my country, and was moving to New York. I knew I was beaten to the pulp, that I couldn't go on drinking. And I kept sober, but resisted coming to a meeting. Didn't want to accept that it was my fate to come to meetings and to try to solve my problem using the AA program. And it was the summer of 2005. I remember seeing a lot of people wearing shorts. It seemed a little bit too American for me. Everybody was happy, laughing, participating, something that is not my specialty. I always wanted to be different and isolate and not be part of group activities, and this seemed like a group that I would never fit in. That turned out to be completely false, and now that I am back in Mexico, I miss so much this group, and I wanted to come back and to express my gratitude, because it is here that I got my life back and that I learned the tools that I use today to survive out there. And it is very emotional for me, because not a single day passes that I don't think of people in this group, that I don't receive an email or text or call someone. My sponsor continues to be the same sponsor. He's a member of this group. And I also keep very close in touch with my first sponsor, who is a great guy, and who mails me the CDs with the recordings of this meeting. So I hear you guys in my car driving in the traffic of Mexico City, and I don't know if it counts as a meeting, but I feel completely different. And once I hear the tapes, I hand them over to friends that speak English, and they all know about the existence of the Atlantic group. And it's a great pride for me to share with them the things that I learned here. If you're new, stay here. I don't think there's another group like this in the whole world. I've been to meetings in different places. And the structure of these meetings, the founders of this group had our best interests at heart, and they set out to follow the traditions and to do a group that is inspired in what the first AA members did, and is a group that stresses work of the steps and sponsorship. And I can't tell you how important that is. I have been attending different groups in Mexico City, trying to find a place in one of them. I have a home group now, which is Grupo Prado Norte, which is a fantastic group. I'm very happy with those guys. But I needed to hear what I heard here over and over again every week and every day in the different meetings that this group has, that I need to have a sponsor, that I needed to follow directions, and all the good stuff that you hear in these meetings, because people work with others, do service, and that has proven invaluable to me. And it's like savings in my personal bank account that I take with me wherever I go. And whenever I find a difficult situation, I hear the voice of my first sponsor or my current sponsor or Peggy or someone in this group saying something that is invaluable to me. How it was. I think that from the get-go, from a very early age, I was an alcoholic. My father is an alcoholic. I associated drinking with growing up. I thought that when I grew up, it was my prerogative to drink, and I saw I lived in a reckless culture where drinking is part of socializing, so it's not uncommon for people to drink too much and to get away with it. But that wasn't my case. Early on, I started to have consequences, and the consequences were from the silly and the extravagant behavior to very serious consequences, crashing cars, and all sorts of tragedies, which I overcame. I was doing very well at work, and things on the outside seem okay, but on the inside, things were getting really bad. And it got to a point where I couldn't take anything more, and I was really humbled and desperate. I had what we call the gift of desperation, and I was willing to follow direction. And I was lucky to find a sponsor that knew what he was talking about, that was evident to me. And I started following direction and working the steps. And I went seriously working the steps. And that helped me to start seeing what my part in my resentments was. And I got the tools to address those resentments, which were really poisoning my life. I played over and over in my head what people had done to me, how they had been unfair, how they didn't recognize the talent that I had. And I started seeing what my part in things was. And I was really bringing over my head, destroying at night the things that I built during the day. And it was very tiring to live that way, and since I have been in this program, my life has changed so much that I learned how to clean those resentments. I learned how to live with gratitude and to do the necessary things to have my family in my life, to have my friends in my life, to be of service. I have now one sponsee which welcomed me into AA in Mexico City, the first meeting that I went. And I go back to Mexico 3 years after, and he is dying inside. He hasn't worked the steps. Nobody can help him. Nobody works the steps. Nobody's into sponsorship in that group. And I have the chance of taking him through the big book and doing what I learned here. And that is incredible. To be of service, to be useful, is the greatest joy that I have today. And that I have to thank this group and AA. The last year, I went through two events that could have made me drink before having this program, and it was the loss of a job and the loss of a marriage. And I can tell you that I found strength in God and in the things I've learned here and in service and getting out of myself, and I landed on my feet. I was able to get a job that is amazing, where I'm very happy to act with dignity and responsibly and try to be a man of decency in getting divorced and doing the right thing throughout the process, I hope, I think. And my life is getting every day better. I feel this responsibility to give back, to continue shopping for different groups in Mexico City to find the fabric of AA is clearly different there, but there's many places where you can go for meetings, and I'm just trying to get adapted to that new environment and to have a community around me. But I feel every day that I have a community, and whenever I feel the need to speak with someone, I call my friends in this group. I call my sponsor every day. I keep my New York mobile so I can be calling him every day. And the other thing that I wanted to tell you before I run out of time is prayer. I heard Peggy Barron say to me once that prayer changes everything. And I keep doing the prayer wheel. I do it with a member of this group that lives in Mexico City every day. And we're translating it and inviting other people to join us. And if you're not doing it, I encourage you to do it. It's a fantastic tool that will help you to learn how to pray. And I want to thank you, and it's great to be here.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Davida.
Hi, my name is Davida. I'm an alcoholic. I'll start with my sponsor is Alicia. I'm a member of the Atlantic Group, and I totally forgot everything I was going to say. I think I have like 20 qualifications, and I just want to say my daughter is here, my oldest daughter, with her boyfriend, so I just want to welcome her. And I have three other kids, but they're not here. One's in Israel, and then I have twins. Okay, so I just wanted to get that out there. And I have a sponsee, and I actually have a service commitment at this meeting, and it would be right now that I would be upstairs counting people. I'm the people counter in the balcony. Now, when I first got that commitment, I was a little bit upset because I felt like they put me in the balcony and there's only like a couple of, you know, there aren't that many people to count. I didn't think it was important enough. Like, and I was more upset because my other commitment used to be to buy the cookies, but Bonnie told me that I had to buy the low-end cookies. So I just feel like these commitments, like first I'm the low-end cookie person and now I'm stuck upstairs in the balcony and it's like, you know, well, when am I ever going to be like up front? Because it's all about me. But anyways, today was a great day and I started out my day because if I don't like think of things, I'll totally forget like normalcy. Like I said, today I'm going to be nice. That's it. I'm going to be nice. And I went into work and like someone said to me, you look really happy today. I go, thank you. I'm going to be nice today. But I mean, the truth of the matter is like if I don't remind myself, like I forget, like I don't know normal people, like they're nice in general or they don't mind when people are talking. Like I don't, like I'll go to a mall and if someone's talking, I'll get really upset. You know, they're just talking. But anyways, that's why I belong here. Okay, alcohol. I loved drinking. And I started drinking at 12, and I drank for 25 years. Okay, and alcohol really made every decision in my life. It chose my friends, because I only hung out with people that drank. Everything I did, pretty much I was under the influence. It made me graduate college. There were 91 girls. I went to this yeshiva college, Yeshiva University on 34th Street. My father didn't want me to go to NYU because he said there's drugs and alcohol there and bad people. So I went to Stern College for Women, and I found like the 10 people that, you know, up, and we all lived on the penthouse because they didn't want us with anybody else. And that, I mean, it determined who I was friends with. I used to drink at Brews on 34th Street. And, you know, everybody else, so the people I was with, they drank, but, and they were good drinkers, but I was always even, like, up on them. Like, they would have two or three drinks, I would have five or six Long Island iced teas, I would end up throwing up. I mean, I majored in throwing up in college. I threw up all the time, and I didn't think anything was wrong with it then. Like, when you're in that, you think it's normal. Like, my behaviors, now the more sober I get, like, I was insane. You know, just the drinking, my lifestyle, everything I did. I chose my husband because he drank, and he was a doctor, so that was good. And but he drank, which was even better, and he was Orthodox Jew, which I had to marry because otherwise my parents would kill themselves. So, you know, and that didn't work out because now he's my ex-husband. But anyway, so, you know, first it was a lot of fun. And then it was okay. And then it was like, you know, I always drank. Like, I went to a party, I had to drink. If there wasn't alcohol there, I'd be really pissed off. Like, once I went to this bar mitzvah in Borough Park, very religious bar mitzvah, separate seating, men and women. And they don't give the women alcohol. Like they don't think, like, you know, it's like the women don't drink. And even the men, they have, like they call it schnapps. Anyways. So I was there, and, like, no alcohol on the table. Like, and I, like, was crazed. I was like, I went into the kitchen and, like, went to these waiters. Where's the alcohol? Like, what? There isn't any alcohol. I go, I don't care. You got to find me a bottle of alcohol. Like, I was obsessed. And I left. I remember I left, and I went to a bar in Brooklyn on Ditmas Avenue somewhere. I went to a lot of places that I shouldn't have been. And the truth of the matter is, seriously, at the end of my drinking, drinking took over everything in my life. And it's so powerful. They talk about it, you know, like Bill W., I'm being a master. Like, alcohol was my master. I'm a mother. I have four kids. I was a wonderful mother. You know, when I wasn't drinking, I was a little neurotic. I used to always think they were going to get kidnapped. And I would, like, call school and make sure they were okay. And I wouldn't let anybody take care of them. And in my neighborhood, there are a lot of housekeepers that take care of their kids. I don't, you know, and I wouldn't, like, I was in the park with the housekeepers because I didn't, like, leave them with anybody. And you know, the alcohol took that over for me. I remember leaving my kids in the middle of the night to go out drinking and sneak out of the house. And I went to place, and I used to drive drunk with them, and I used to go to PTA meetings drunk and serve pizza at school drunk. And at the end of my drinking, I was in a lot of places I shouldn't have been in. And alcohol, they talk about what alcohol took me to drugs. And, like, it totally, like, changed my mind. I wanted to live in that life. Like, I wanted to sell my house. I'd have a lot of money, and I wanted to move to the project so I can drink and live with simple people. And I changed my name to D. I was Durango D because I drove a Durango. And even when I first came into AA, I used to say, hi, I'm D. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And after a while, like, my sponsor said to me, your name is DeVita, and you're an alcoholic. You're an AA. So you're not an addict. You just talk about alcohol. So it really bothers me when people say I'm an alcoholic and addict, but that's just me because, you know, people bother me. But anyways, so the truth of the matter is, so anyway, at the end of my drinking, I was very sick, and, you know, a serious note, I left my kids alone. It was in the summer. I couldn't get out of bed. Like, I live right by the beach, and it was right before school, and like, one in the afternoon, my twins are, like, sitting on the floor eating cereal in their pajamas on a beautiful sunny day, and I was really, like, and I really wanted to stop. Like, my girls were in camp, they were coming home. I said, midlife crisis is over, and I'm going to just stop, and that's it. And the most horrifying, scariest thing in my life was when I couldn't stop, but I knew that I couldn't drink. And I remember being in bed and lying in bed for like 5 or 6 days because I physically couldn't move, and I thought, like, I had leukemia. And I went to my doctor, and it's like, alcohol is like very cunning, baffling, powerful. Like, my doctor didn't even question me, like, you know, are you drinking, are you drugging, are you doing anything? And that enabled me a lot, like, because I was this mother, and I lived in suburbia, so nobody thought, oh, she's a drug addict, alcoholic, and, you know, she's hanging out in crack houses. You know, that wasn't the first thing on people's mind. They thought I was sick. I lost 25 pounds. You know, they thought I was in a depression. So nobody caught on to my alcoholism. And my parents, nobody, but they knew something was wrong. I isolated. I pushed everybody away. You know, in the beginning, when I first got sober, I thought my drinking didn't affect anybody but me. That's so wrong. It affected everybody in my life. I isolated from all my friends. I didn't even know what a relationship was. Everything was about me, my kids. I thought they were okay because they weren't abused and they were dressed. And you know, my twins had a housekeeper that got them dressed. I never saw them. I was sleeping. I couldn't get out of bed. And I knew that if I didn't reach out for help, I wasn't going to be able to get these kids off to school. You know, and I checked myself in and hated it, and they wanted me to, like, hang out in Home Depot and work for 6 months. I go, see you later. And I, like, left, and I said, they said, you're going to drink. I said, I'm not going to drink because I never want to come back here. And I really meant it. Like, I really was not lying. I never wanted to drink again. And I said I wasn't going to drink. And if you would have asked me, 9 days later, I was drinking. I was miserable. I was in my skin. You know, and you remove the alcohol, and I still had the isms. You know, and I didn't know what to do with myself. I how do I live without alcohol? And this program to get to recovery has taught me how to live like a normal, like, you know, a human being, sometimes normal. But, you know, the steps are a way of life, and it applies to everybody. They talk about, it's all 1 minute left? I didn't really say everything I wanted to say. Okay. God. And Duncan, can I have some of your time? Anyways, okay, first of all, if you knew you belong here, don't think you don't, because you're sitting in here, you belong here. I didn't think I did. Okay, get a sponsor, get someone that looks happy. You don't want to look a miserable human being. And Get a commitment. And listen, you live in New York. I don't want to hear any whining about you can't go to meetings. I live in Long Island. The meeting's at 7 o'clock. If you don't make a 7 o'clock meeting, there's no meeting. I used to drive in from Long Island. I come here every Tuesday night. I used to go to midnight in the beginning to get to a meeting. No excuses. Get to a meeting. And the main thing is do not think. Okay? Don't think. The worst thing in my mind was thinking. And courage to change. Serenity prayer. This program gave me courage, it gave me the knowledge, it taught me the tools of how to be a human being, and I have a relationship today. I have a wonderful relationship with my boyfriend, he's sitting over there, and my kids I love, and they love me, and my life is beyond my wildest dream, and it's not about the cash and prizes. God is with me every moment, and this is a great group, and thank you very much.
Our main speaker tonight is Duncan.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Duncan, and I'm an alcoholic. And that's the good news today. There was a time in my life when I didn't know what was wrong with me, and it wasn't until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I found out that I was suffering from an incurable disease, that it's threefold in nature. It's spiritual, mental, and physical. That it's progressive. Over time, it gets worse, never better, and that it's potentially fatal. And I say it's the good news because when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was promised that if I did a few very certain, simple things, I could recover. I could get better. I could regain my sanity again, perhaps my self-respect and the respect of my family, and I could hold my head up high. And that was absolutely beyond my wildest dreams at the moment that was told to me. When I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a daily drinker. I was drinking around the clock. I had a bottle under the bed. I always had to have a stash somewhere out in the bushes or somewhere around the house so I could feel comfortable and I could feel safe. And at the end of my drinking, I couldn't, just like the book says, I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. I was at the jumping off point. I knew loneliness as only an alcoholic, I think, can. I was wishing for the end. I was praying to a God I didn't believe in to please, like when I passed out that night, if you could please just like take me out of my body. You know, living was just becoming too unbearable, and I just didn't have the courage to take my life, and I didn't want to hurt my family. That's where my alcoholism took me. It didn't start off that way, you know. I was very young when I first came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 21, and I started drinking very early, you know, probably like a lot of people. And probably like a lot of the people I drank with who didn't necessarily find it necessary to drink to the degree I did. I drank with a lot of people who, you know, stole their parents' bottle and tucked it away and went out into the woods and had a few nips and whatever. They all went off to college or they stopped drinking or they stopped doing other things that I was doing at the time. I just kept on going because I am, as I've found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm bodily and mentally different than my fellows. I have a disease. I have an allergic reaction to alcohol. And I have a mind that can't stop thinking about when I'm going to get the next one. And that's what separates me from them. I did a lot of tragically stupid, hilarious things. All of them, I believe, are irrelevant to my alcoholism. Because the people that I did a lot of these things with, like I said, they didn't go to the extent that I went, you know. Maybe some of them may come in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous eventually. It's a self-diagnosed disease, as I've learned, and I don't diagnose anybody else's alcoholism, just my own. And when I started drinking, I was really, really young. And I was also doing a lot of other things that a 13 and a 14-year-old probably shouldn't have been doing. a lot of dry goods, and I'm not going to go into that. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I honor the fifth tradition. I am grateful to another substance that condensed in about a five-year period, which probably would have taken another 15 or 20 years for alcohol to do, to bring me to my bottom. So I'm grateful. When I was very little, I grew up in an environment where there was a lot of excessive partying, shall we say. And it was in the 70s, and a lot of things weren't addictive. And a lot of the people I worshipped and I looked up to, whether it was the local friends of the family or my brothers and sisters, whether it was or it was the artists and musicians, everybody that I admired and I wanted to be like, they led a very excessive lifestyle, you know. And those are the people I was drawn to. Those are the people I wanted to hang out with. And my drinking was just about a few beers on the weekend with my buddies, you know. And I had a very low tolerance to it. I didn't particularly like the taste. I didn't always have that kind of, you know, it wasn't the great panacea of society for me. You know, I just liked doing it because it was there, and I like to get drunk, you know. And I don't think there was any major revelation with regards to that. But it was a lot of fun, and a lot of my friends could drink more than me. So I say that because I wasn't like, you know, I didn't automatically have this great tolerance to alcohol. I had to work on that, you know. Just to speed things up a little bit, I'm drinking more. I'm doing more things that I said I'd never do. I have all these kind of barriers that I've established for myself and that were established by my family, you know. I knew what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing. And I always chose the latter. And not knowing anything about alcoholism. So I am fast forwarding. I'm drinking during the week. The window's closing on the period of time that I'm drinking, the amount I'm drinking. And I'm feeling more and more isolated. I will have to say that the one common factor that I hear and I relate to in other alcoholics aside from the drinking is the fear. I was tremendously, tremendously fearful. I felt like, you know, fear was like oozing out of every pore of my body. And I was always running from responsibility and critical deadlines. You know, before this meeting, I sit down and I ask God. I said, you know, this is no longer about me. I'm up here just sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And I ask God to talk to me and through me and to share the message as I've discovered it in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was becoming more and more isolated in my drinking. And I was beginning to have these panic attacks, these horrific panic attacks. I was like experiencing uncontrollable. My heart would race. My mind would start spinning out of control. I'd want to go somewhere. I didn't know where I wanted to go, but I needed to get out of myself. And I thought I was losing my mind. I thought I was going crazy. And I thought that if I had shared that with anybody, that they would think I was insane and they would lock me up and throw away the key. I was, I would like to take a moment to just step back for a second. I have this, my wife is home and we have two beautiful children in diapers, and neither one of them are sleeping during the night, and it's really something else. What we operating on very little sleep. So anyway, fast forwarding. So here I am. So if I start to nod out here, I told my sponsor to just throw a piece of paper at me or something. Leave me with the big book. And it's really amazing. It's a gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, so I had a lot of fun during this time of drinking. And like I said, I started having these panic attacks. And all these people that I started hanging out with, my running buddies, my family, I began to feel increasingly more isolated around them. And it took more and more drinking to make me feel connected to the world around me. And I don't really identify with people who say they were drinking to blot out their feelings. I was really at the end of my drinking, or towards when my alcoholism really started to take effect. My drinking was to reach out and connect with the world around me, because I felt horribly, horribly isolated and depressed and frightened. And I began to feel that people were thinking behind my back, and that people could see how uncomfortable I felt on the inside. And I was starting to do things that I felt horribly ashamed about. And I was no longer able to kind of push these things deep down inside of myself. You know, the pressure cooker was just like so full. And my friends stopped inviting me out, and my family started criticizing me more, and they were saying, you know, why don't you stop, you know, hanging out so late, or why do you have to drink as much as you do, or actually they had an intervention in the backyard of my father's house where I was living at the time, and they all gathered around. I'm the youngest of five kids. And they all gathered around, and they invited me in. I thought it was going to be like a barbecue, and I show up in the backyard, and everybody's sitting there. It was like intervention, and it was so embarrassing, you know. There I was trying to keep my drinking very private. Meanwhile, you know, it's like, you know, like I'm an open book. Everybody knows about my drinking. It's not a secret. And I'm causing carnage and wreckage wherever I go. You know, I'm getting into fights. I'm coming home with marks all over my face. You know, at this time I'm like sleeping on a mattress without a sheet, and I'm like, it's like really, really sad. I would sleep in this room and my bedroom, and I would tack up sheets on my window. And to keep the light out, and I wouldn't even leave my room to go to the bathroom, which was just like outside the door, you know. I just like it was too much effort. I just didn't feel like seeing the sunshine, you know. I couldn't be out in daylight. I couldn't hear birds laughing, singing, or hear children laughing. I had nephews and nieces. I couldn't participate in my family, So I'm at this intervention, and everybody's like, Duncan, you're dying, we're witnessing it, and we don't know what to do. You need help. You know, at that time, I flipped them all the bird, and I said, you know, I'm going to do what I want. Who are you to tell me what I can and can't do? If you felt the way I felt, if you experienced life the way I had been experiencing it, you know, you'd be doing the things that I was doing. Because as I've come to understand it, drinking wasn't my problem. You know, drinking was my solution. Alcoholism was my problem. I was just too scared to feel myself in my own skin without something to kind of take the edge off or help me get that connection that I really was looking for. And another human being, you know. And it was just beyond me. I just thought I was really going insane, really. And alcohol was helping scotch tape me together. And now you want to take this away, you know. And I couldn't tell this to anybody. I really was just, I was just angry. I was always running my whole life. You know, I was like the running man. I left that, I left the house and proceeded to get, you know, drunk. And I was kicked out of my father's house because of a fight that I had with a girlfriend who was living with us at the time. She was came out of rehab and was living at my father's house. Out of the goodness of his heart, he took this. He had no idea, this poor man, as to what he was getting himself involved in. And I got into a fight with her, and he's like, "That's it, I've had it with you. You are out of here." And I bottomed out at my brother's house, you know. I never want to forget what alcohol did to me. I am not one of these people that think that someday, thank you, that I can drink again. Or I just do this one day at a time. I do this one day at a time. There's wisdom and acceptance in that for me. But I am under no delusion or illusion that I can ever drink safely again. You know, that knowledge in and of itself will never save me from picking up the first drink or wanting to blow my brains out. Without this program and having a spiritual experience, life will just become too unbearable, man. I will, like, tighten down. That's been my experience. I've tried to do this thing a bunch of different ways, you know. I'm not one of these people that sit here and say, "Please stay." That's not my experience. That's not how I got sober. I got sober with people like, there's the door that swings both ways. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, you do what we do. That's what I was told. If not, you know, maybe you need to do some more research. John Barleycorn is our greatest advocate. I'm not in here trying to increase the membership of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm up here trying to share my experience, strength, and hope so that I stay sober. Period. That's it. So I come in the rooms, I've got 15 minutes, so I'm going to wind this up a little bit. So I come into the rooms of, I'm going mad, I tell my family I'm an alcoholic, they're like, "No kidding." And everybody cries, I cry, I have a spiritual experience, like weight's taken off me. And I then realize that I'm so physically dependent upon this stuff, I could like go into have delirium tremors as a result of like trying to quit this on my own. I am clueless. Because I felt so good that I finally confessed this. You know, the first part of the first step. That night, I'm freaking out. Don't know what's going on with me. I call up my sister. I'm having these panic attacks again. Tell her I'm freaking out. She takes me to a hospital. They put me in a room in a paper gown. I'm sitting on a steel table. The intern, the psychiatrist that night, comes in, cowers in the corner, and is asking me a bunch of questions. Who's the president? What's the difference between an apple and an orange? I have like 20 voices talking to me. She's asking me if there are any voices in my head. I'm like, absolutely not. I am not telling you what's going on in my head. You know, and then she does a series of tests, and I think I have like tumors. I'm like all out of my mind. And I'm having auditory and visual hallucinations. She says, "Well, I have to tell you, you know, as a representative of this medical institution, that you're going through alcohol withdrawal, and there's a strong possibility that you can have a heart attack and die during delirium tremors." I was like, oh, great. So, but that being said, I mentioned that, and I was so scared when I heard that. That woke me up. I'm like, great, I want to get sober now, and I can't. I was like, I need to make a phone call. She left the room. My clothes were on. I was out the door. They sent an ambulance after me. They talked me in. I mean, how tragic. I then, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning in the middle of nowhere. I'm going to find a tall boy. And I'm going to figure this out. You know, I'm always going to figure this out. I'm going to get a drink and figure this out. I had no idea what kind of serious shape I was in, really. So then I detox in front of my family. They, you know, my sister makes it. My old family's sitting around me. They hand me a beer. First, my sister makes a phone call to a psychiatrist, and they say, give the guy a beer. He's about to freak out. He's about to have he's about to flop around like a fish. And they give me a beer. They watch me calm down. My family's completely freaked out. And they're watching alcoholism unfold before their very eyes. You know, I had a sponsor, like, say, it's like being stripped naked in a room full of people and being pushed into a rose bush. You know, it's like embarrassing and painful at the same time. You know, I get Librium administered to me every day for 5 days. I detox in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get a sponsor who at the time had 26 years, and he was wonderful. He was a great guy, Walter. I owe a lot to him. And I became a 90-day wonder. He took me around to meetings, sat me up front. You don't know anything about staying sober. Take the cotton out of your ears, stick it in your mouth. Anything you could say, you know, if you open your mouth, it might make someone else sick, you know, that sort of thing. You have absolutely, we don't want to hear anything you have to say about staying sober. You know, absolutely nothing. Took me to a lot of anniversary meetings so I could hear the message. Anyway, I became a 90-day wonder, hit the road, going to figure this out, got a lot worse. And I used some of the principles of this program to stay dry for a period of time. Got too unbearable. Came back into AA. I said, okay, I'll get a sponsor. I'll kind of work these steps you guys got here. Because I never really did the work. You know, Walter helped me out a lot, but he didn't introduce me to the big book, didn't take me through the steps. And I kind of did a fourth step, got some time, was afraid to do what you all do here in this meeting, you know. Afraid to get a home group, a service commitment, sponsees. I was half measuring it. Just like the book said, the wind of change blew, and it blew hard. My house of cards fell, and I became the running man again. Fear dominated me again. My disease took me out the door. You know, I will do everything possible my way before I say, finally, okay, what do you got? My way doesn't work. So I did on my own for 2 years. Again, trying to come up with my own spiritual solution. Met a wonderful psychologist. He helped me out a lot, but he couldn't relieve my alcoholism. No human power can relieve my alcoholism, as I've discovered. And I was 2 years trying to do a lot of yoga, reading a lot of really great spiritual literature, do a lot of meditating. It wasn't happening. First part of the first step. I was an alcoholic, but my life was still manageable by me. Came back into the, I called a friend up. I was thinking about killing myself at this time. That's my fail-safe, self-destruction. You know, if I'm not working in spiritual programs, how can Duncan destroy Duncan's life? Called a friend up, reached out to him, and he introduced me to somebody who introduced me to the 12 steps as they're outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. My life absolutely took off like a rocket. As soon as I started getting into this book, we did a step a week, not a step a year. And I began to have a profound spiritual experience. Right after my third step, my mind slowed down. I felt this sense of power and strength come into my heart, this sense of love, this connectedness to the world around me, this unity that I was looking for really in the bottle. I was looking for this God consciousness. Now, the God of my understanding, you know, and as I've discovered it, it lies within me, and all the steps are designed to weed out all the gobbledygook, all this stuff that gets in the way between me and channeling my higher power. And I need to have this spiritual experience. See, alcohol was limited. It boomeranged on me. It stopped working. I need to tap an unsuspected inner resource within myself. And I presently identify that as a power greater than myself. And I understand that to be God today. And I know this power exists in me and it exists in all of you. And my job now is to remind myself of that and work these steps on a daily basis to grow in understanding effectiveness and to share what I have so abundantly found in these rooms to another sick and suffering alcoholic who cares to have it or want it. As a result of doing these steps, I've gotten married, I've been able to hold down a job, I have an accountant, a doctor, I've got all these other things that other people have in life. I have responsibilities. You know, these are the things that are beyond my wildest dreams. I have peace of mind. You know, I look in the mirror and I don't hate the person I see anymore. I have this wife. And two beautiful children. That's old Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not me. That's not me. Anything I have of any value in my life is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous work in the 12 steps as they're outlined in this blue book. And taking direction from sponsors who I've been blessed with great sponsorship. I have a wonderful sponsor now. Thank you. And and I show up now. When people ask me to be at a place at a certain time, I'm there. And I can look at the world in the eye. I don't feel like anybody's looking through me anymore. You know? I don't want your life. I want my life. And I always wanted someone else's life. I wanted to be like someone else. I don't want to be like anybody else today. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. You know, I could never in one lifetime repay what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. And, you know, there are a couple of people who passed away this year, Scott R. and Clint H. And I stand on the shoulders of giants you hear all the time. And I'm grateful that I was born in a time that Alcoholics Anonymous exists. I'm grateful to Dr. Bob and Bill W. And I'm grateful to the people who pass on the message to them, Roland, Hazard, and Ebby. You know, a lot of people had their hands in getting this incredible program off the ground. And I love what Carl Jung wrote to Bill W. in a letter, and Bill always kept in his desk, was that, you know, he acknowledged, he thanked Bill for reaching out to him, and he acknowledged his meeting with Roland Hazard and Roland H. And he said that, you know, I love that, he said that alcoholics are on a low-bottom search for unity with God, in medieval terms, he called it. And then at the end of the letter, he said, spiritus contra spiritum, which basically means spirit overcomes spirits, you know, and that there was no coincidence that spirit gives that elation and that feeling about that I was looking for, which is really I can only get from the God of my understanding now. And, you know, I have an incredible life now, and it's not always easy. I don't want to say that every day is rosy. My father suffered a massive heart attack, my only surviving parent. And my brother had colon cancer and was an inch away from death. But Alcoholics Anonymous showed that I could still tap this joy that's within me and I could show up for them. Because once again, it's no longer about me. I could be of service to my family. And I could still find gratitude in the fact that I've been given a second chance at life. And I could still experience this fear and this concern for the welfare of my loved ones and my family. And one more thing is my first daughter, when she was born, she had this infection. They didn't know what it was at first, and it could be, you know, they worked the back end, and it could be very bad, or it could be something very treatable. And but they had to do this test. They had to run a spinal tap, and she was just born. And my wife came home from the hospital after 5 days. She had a cesarean. We had all the toys out and everything, and they had to go back into the hospital, and I was left alone in this apartment, looking at all these toys and all, you know, everything that we set up and the life that we are creating. And I was thinking, no, this can't end badly, God. You know, I was putting conditions on God. I was making deals. And when I first found out about this, that it could be something very serious, the first thing I did as I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is I called my sponsor. And I got on my knees and I asked God for help. And then I got up and I started being of service to my wife and my daughter. And I had to walk through a spinal tap and had to just be holding down my little daughter. Thank you. And Alcoholics Anonymous gave me that strength and that courage by helping me find the God of my understanding, which gave me the courage to show up for them. And as it turns out, you know, she's very healthy today and, you know, a handful, you know. And she's constantly, she's 22 months old and she's constantly telling me what to do. It's amazing. But it's all good, you know, it's all good. I got the 1 minute sign, and I want to read something just very quickly, and it's in A Vision for You, and I love it. I read it when I go to when I used to go to Rikers, and I go to institutions. Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to you, will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then, thank you for my sobriety.